Stephanie Felton.
My name is Stephanie Paige Felton.
And, where were you born?
Brooklyn, New York.
And, what's your birthday?
November 12th, I think.
And your, what's your permanent address?
Right now, Stickles Mill, 6316 Mariposa Avenue, number 31, Citrus Heights, Mountain Park,
619. And as you know, I took your photograph. And we put it in this book on there called Attic. And on one page, with your photograph, the next step on the other page, would have your story. And hopefully, there'll be 50 attics in this book. And what I want you to talk about is your experience breaking hope and what happened in the spiritual path today, your vision of hope. And, so we need situations to have to see. And whatever you'd like to see. Next to your photograph that describes your life and how weird, how wonderful it is today.
Well, like I said, I was born in Brooklyn, New York. And I was born in Brooklyn, New York. And neither of my parents are called from this family. That side of the family, it has like a history of alcoholism that goes way back. And my father's side of the family, they're like East Coast Jewish. So, there's no history of alcoholism or any kind of chemical dependency in that family, but as far as I know, it was a real dysfunctional family, my father's family, a lot of neglect and physical and emotional abuse. So, I was born there with them, and it was like I had one strike against me when I was born sort of already. I was supposed to like be this son, this prodigal son or something, and I wasn't. And it was okay, I guess, like there was always this feeling of non-acceptance of me on the part of my father. And he like wanted me to be an artist. He's an artist and wanted me to play ball. And, but it was like nothing I ever did was okay with him. That's kind of how I felt from the time I was small. And then my sister was born, and he was hoping for a boy, so naturally, it kind of set the tone for the family environment, sort of non-acceptance, and I always kind of felt less than as a little kid, and I felt different than all my friends. That kind of thing. And my mother and father were finally divorced after a period of separation for like a summer when I was six. We moved to Richmond, Virginia to live with my uncle, who at the time was an active alcoholic. And living in that home was a lot better than living with my father. And he came down and he kidnapped us. My mother followed shortly thereafter to get us back, and she sort of went along with this reconciliation, but all the while I guess she had this plan to like escape, which we did, and we moved my mother, my sister, and myself to Minnesota to live with her mother, and three of her seven sisters and brothers were living at home with us at that time, and I started to become one of those troubled kids, and I was in and out of human development centers and psychoanalyst office and all that kind of stuff because of my acting out behavior. And I always felt real responsible for my mother and sister's well-being. So I sort of vacillated between being this responsible caretaker and then this belligerent sort of rebel. And when I was 9, my mother met my stepfather, met a guy who was soon to become my stepfather, and they married, and I remember having a feeling of real relief that somebody was going to take care of us, somebody nice, somebody that liked us. And they were married, and we all four lived together for 3 years and moved into the suburbs and had a nice house and a puppy and all that stuff. And my father was taken from us in a motorcycle accident. I considered him to be my father all along. And so then I started to feel like real responsible for my mother and sister again, and how was I going to make everything okay? And at that point, I started smoking dope and using alcohol, and that was kind of an answer to all my problems. It worked really good at the time, and it was fun. And first time I got loaded, I got real sick, but I couldn't wait to do it again. And I went through junior high school kind of just loaded all the time. And my mother decided that we couldn't stay in Minnesota any longer because of, you know, her memories about my stepfather and everything. So she was driving through California to San Francisco to see my uncle, the one that we had both lived earlier. And she went through trucking. And my family liked to ski, so we decided that we would meet there. And at this time, I was, like, already a total rebel and that kind of stuff. And my mom was, like, a really pretty emotionally available person, but it seems to me that some of the stuff that I had chosen as my behavior was already, had already been, like, developed at the time. And when I started high school, I went from a junior high school into a high school, I decided that, you know, I was going to keep partying, and the kids that I decided to hang out with were like the stoners and stuff, and I started to use just about anything I could get my hands on. And that's how I went through my freshman and part of my sophomore year in high school, until I met through a girlfriend, this guy who was 21 and a farmer, and I had run away before. And I can only think that it's by God's grace that I was saved, because I was in another pretty horrendous situation in the world and stuff. But my mom, after I had met my boyfriend, I decided I wanted to move to Oregon to be a farmer's wife with him. And so she let me go because she didn't want me to run away. So I went up there, and I was licensing for a while, and we never got along, my boyfriend and I, because I was sort of like this wild kid that he had to take care of. And at one point, there was like a graduation party for some of the kids that were in school up there, and I was invited to go, and he was running a skitter up in the hills, so I decided that I was going to go do that. And went to this party, and we decided that we were going to go down the road to get some pot from some relatives of hers, and she was fucking around on the road driving. We went off the road and hit like a pasture post, and on impact I broke my back. And although I think that I was active pretty much in my disease before that time, it seemed that that really helped it to progress a lot faster because I was medicated. I remember jonesing in the hospital and hallucinating and all kinds of stuff on and off because they'd take me off the morphine and I'd complain about the other things that they were getting weren't good enough. And so after a period of being in a regular hospital and ICU and stuff, I went into a physical rehabilitation center, and I learned to like take care of my body, my new body. And That was real painful for me at the time, but I didn't know it. Because as soon as I got out, I was in a wheelchair like a week before I got out, and I just decided. And this is something, you know, it's like all these negative things that people think about, you know, having a hard life and being an addict and all that stuff. I tend to think that some of those liabilities can turn into assets because I became a real survivor in the hospital. And I decided that I wasn't going to leave that place with a wheelchair. So I just worked real hard. And I left with, like, crutches and leg braces, back brace. And I looked like what people on the street would call, you know, like a cripple or a handicapped person. And so when I went back to my hometown, I set out to prove to all my friends that I was just the same as I was before. And in doing so, and in hiding my pain, I just drank and drank and drank, and I was going to drink everybody under the table, and I was going to do makeup and crazier than everybody else. And so I did that for like 5 years. And for a long time, I mostly drank and just used other drugs occasionally, like they weren't really my obsession until I was about 17. And then I started using a lot of methamphetamines. And I never liked any kind of speed when I was younger because I couldn't get drunk enough. So, but then I started using meth, and I liked that. And I moved in with my dealer. And we were together for a year and a half. And it was real violent relationship, and it was a time when I look back on it, it's real frightening to me. It's like opening the door to a real scary place, because of the fact that I was so strung out and so deluded that I couldn't differentiate between what was real and what wasn't real, even with my feelings. And so I suffered like an emotional collapse. I think it was on, well, maybe my 19th birthday or something. Yeah. And I hurt myself and I hurt the people in my house physically. They went and got my mother, but they don't know, and she's going to walk me up. But, you know, like, they were sending me to my observation. So when I talked my way out of it. Anyhow, so I finally got rid of that boyfriend, and I thought that I'd gotten rid of all my problems. And I had been in, you know, a series of different relationships that all seemed different, but they were all real similar. And when I got rid of this boyfriend, I got a roommate, and I tried some controlled using of like cocaine and stuff, because it wasn't like using crack, it wasn't like using meth. But I discovered shortly after, just like trying to use cocaine socially, that using cocaine wasn't like it used to be when I was younger, because of the pattern I had developed with, you know, using the meth. I couldn't sleep on coke or anything, and I would usually end up buying large, large quantities to sell. So after like a year's time, after like this breakup in September of 83, I just went through all kinds of stuff, like trying to figure out what was wrong with me. And I just kind of thought I was crazy. And I tried to go to cosmetology school, and I could never make it to school, and I was never going to graduate. I was like on a 10-year plan. And my mom got real sick in June of 84, and she called me and she needed my help, and I had been up all night on a bender. And she called me and she needed my help, and I couldn't help her, and I felt real guilty about that because she had been there for me when I was sick in the hospital. So I started to sort of introspect and like notice that also when I was trying not to use, that I was involved in another facet of my disease, which was like bulimia, so of like when I wasn't using. So I started to feel like, you know, there was something wrong with me. And when I was 17, I was sitting with a girlfriend and this guy that I moved in with, and we were smoking Freebase. And I said to them, you know, by the time I'm 25, I'm going to quit all this. I'm going to quit partying. And I didn't really know what that meant. And I just knew that, like, someday I wanted to have children, and I wanted to, like, have sort of a regular life that didn't feel so crazy. And so I just said that, a little matter of fact. And just before my mom was sick, I think, I was 20, I remembered that night sitting there, because I had just gone through a night that was real similar. And I remembered saying that, and it just came to me that, yeah, you're not going to be using when you're 25, because you're not going to be here. And it doesn't even sound adequate in my description of it. It was something that I felt. And I got real terrified. And it was like right then that I think I asked God real sincerely. I had made bargains with God before, you know, after all-nighters. But I really sincerely wanted to stop being crazy. So I got down on my knees and I asked God to relieve me of all the pain. And it was like, I think about 4 months after that, that my mom got sick and I realized that there was something really wrong with me. And I went back to Minnesota with my mom. She had to go to a seizure control center in St. Paul, and I went with her, and I was trying to take care of her, and the thing that's strange about it is that she was toxic on the drugs that she uses to control her seizures, so she was, like, detoxing, and I was trying to explain to her that I realized something was wrong with me, and she said to me, kind of, she was in a stupor almost, you have to do something, you have to promise me that you'll seek help, that you'll go into treatment or something like that, and we didn't really know what that meant, but it sounded real good. And so I was in Minnesota with her for 3 weeks, and I behaved myself rather well, you know, being that I was with all my friends, my hardcore friends in Minneapolis and stuff. And I didn't get loaded, really, and I didn't blow it. And so the last night, I went up to Duluth with some friends of mine. And I went to a bar. And I was flying out the next day. I went to a bar with them. And I didn't plan to get drunk. I just kept slamming whiskey. I just kept drinking whiskey. And this was the deal. My mom said to me, we had this rental car, and she said, yeah, you can take the car as long as you promise not to drink. And I promised her. And it was the only time I used the car, and it was the only time that I got so drunk that I couldn't see straight. And I came back to the place that we were staying that night, and I got sick all over my mom, the floor, crying, and I was just laying in my own stench. And she just looked at me, I'm really glad you're going to the treatment, because I already promised her that I will. So I left Minnesota, I came back to Truckee. I spent like a month, like just sort of like free time. My mom was gone, and we didn't live together or anything, but she lived nearby. So I always kind of monitored my use around her of whatever it was I was using at the time. And, you know, I could always maintain well enough to be around her. But that one time that I came back with the car, it was just like the final thing. It's just obvious. So I spent a month just using, drinking, anything I could get my hands on. And I went treatment center shopping. I was like a real responsible treatment center shopper. And I went to all these places, and I talked to the program directors, and you know, I wanted to know what treatment was about and all this stuff. And I went to a program in Sacramento on a real hot day, and I went in there. And I talked to the program director, who's my boss now. But I talked to him, and I said, well, you know, I am going to come to treatment, but, you know, I have got to go to the Chucky Rodeo first, and I've got tickets to Billy Idol and the Pretenders concert, you know. So I'll be back on September 3rd. And he said, no, I don't want you to leave. I don't want you out on the streets. And I said, don't worry, there's no streets in Chucky, there's just roads and stuff. I went back, and I wanted to kind of prove to myself that what I was doing really needed to be done. So that's what I set out to do. Anyhow, I went into treatment. After Labor Day weekend. And I was real willing from the very beginning. And I don't know why that was. I was just real willing. I was probably one of those people that the counselors thought, God, he's never going to make it. He's such a people pleaser. He's so compliant. But I really did have my heart in it. I did want to get better. I mean, maybe my using didn't look like everybody else's. Or, you know, maybe I was like the perennial cheerleader. I don't know. I was just like a party girl. Nobody thought really that there was anything wrong with me too much. I mean, I looked like everybody else. I drank and used just like everybody else pretty much. But the emotional and intense pain that I experienced was enough for me before I wanted to get better. So, I was in treatment for 28 days. I did treatment with flying colors. I went to a recovery home. I was there for 40 days. And I was reprimanded time and time again for being irresponsible. And that was like my main problem at the time. I couldn't stick to anything. They were concerned about that. So I moved back into my trailer and in Truckee, and I continued to stay sober and clean. And I went to meetings all the time. And I did everything that I was told because I was so afraid of experiencing the same kind of internal crisis that I had experienced for so many years. I just didn't want to do it anymore. So I did everything that I was supposed to do. And I was fortunate enough to have people with a lot of clean time around me. People that put me to work, they sort of inducted me, you know, into service positions and that kind of thing. And I did a lot of volunteer work, and I worked at my old high school when I was a kid. And at the time I went into treatment, I was seeing someone who is also an addict, and he's been abstinent same length of time almost that I've been clean. He doesn't have a program, and we're not together anymore, but we were together, and we had a little girl, and he and I, by the grace of God and by the grace of the program, NA has taught me so much stuff. We have a healthy relationship today, and we get along all right, and we're good parents to our little girl. But the breakup that I experienced with him was like one of the hardest things I had to do since I've been clean. And when I did that, I started having to look at myself and really think about what sobriety meant to me. I just kind of went along for a long time just knowing that it was better. That's all that I knew. And I hadn't made really any decisions. And, you know, I worked my steps because I was told to. But it wasn't until about almost like a year and a half, 2 years ago, that I really started to have a feeling of being more connected with the people in the program and a connection with my higher power. And, you know, I ran into people that were sort of like my spiritual advisors during that time, and spent time down up at Ananda, spiritual community and went out there, and I just kind of checked out stuff about God because I didn't have, it was God as I didn't understand Him. And I don't think it's that important to understand it completely, but just to have a feeling. Because to me, faith is like a feeling. I don't really have a description for it. And it's like today, I really know that I was taken care of because I've been able to experience some of that since I've been clean. Just really trusting and having faith, because that's all I know. I don't know how to cope very well with the stuff that happens. Life on my terms doesn't work very well. So it's just been slowly that it was like, first I just knew that being clean was better, and then realizing that being powerless is better. I don't know if I can explain it. But the things that have happened to me since I've been clean, I can't find a better explanation for them. The fact that I really am powerless over so many things, and I feel real grateful to have gone through everything that I've gone through. And I just try to be the best person that I can be and apply everything that I've learned in this program to every area of my life, because you know, it makes my existence so much easier. I don't believe in coincidence today. I just really have an acceptance of things that are sort of unseen, you know. Something like, I just feel inside. And sometimes I meet people that I can share that feeling with. And there's nothing that compares to that. And I find those people and I love them. Today's my birthday. 4 years clean.
Today?
Yeah.
Incredible. 4 years clean today.
Yeah.
The 3rd of September.